Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meal at a restaurant you may want to try. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival. Michael Fulmer, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing great. Always a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing this. Let's dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one. I just want to, first of all, I want to talk about Casa Emma, the restaurant formerly known as Emma, because it's back in the news. Bon Appetit has named it as one of its 14 best new breakfasts in America. We should say that Casa Emma has done very well with this kind of attention. It's been mentioned in the New York Times. Stephanie Velasquez, the co-owner and pastry chef, won Pastry Chef of the Year in the Culture Map Tastemaker Awards. They were a James Beard Award finalist for Best New Restaurant in the Country. They got a Michelin Bib Gourmand. So it's not a complete surprise to see Casa Emma on this Bon Appetit list. What do you think?
I would have been surprised if it wasn't on the list. I think that would have been more accurate. So yeah, it's definitely a known quantity, and they live up to their reputation. You know, the hype is real, as they say.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about Casa Emma on the show a number of times. I had Stephanie and her partner, Nicholas Vera, on the show before to talk about kind of the inspiration for the restaurant. But, you know, it's always consistently delicious. Like every time I go there, I'm just delighted.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Actually, when I travel through the Heights, I make a point of driving by just to check to see if there's a line, if there's either a short line or no line. I just will automatically pull in. Like I said, the word is out. And so there's consistently a crowd there, and deservedly so. You know, I just love what they do. They're not necessarily reinventing the wheel, but they're putting their personality into all these dishes, and they're doing it with a real sense of high quality execution as well as high quality ingredients. And like, what a, you know, I use that, you know, that term game changer, but it really is. You know, it's not just the nixtamalization. It's not just, okay, we're making our own salsas here. I mean, it's all of that, but like it's executed really well. I mean, I just knew it as a coffee shop initially, and now it's like, wow, this is a real great place to go eat and have breakfast. And, you know, I think it's worth noting that Houston doesn't really have a lot of really good breakfast joints. That, you know, that's a difficult economic, you know, venture. And when you see a place that really excels at it, you know, it's just the lines are going to be there, you know, and I'm
right.
Grateful
but
that
we love, but as a civic, you know, as a society, as a dining culture, we love a Mexican breakfast, right? La Mexicana and
100%
Guadalupana, Brothers Tacos. I mean, you know, we love Mexican breakfast. I'd say it's probably Houston's favorite form of breakfast. So it's not a surprise to see Casa Emma take off. I think what's maybe even more surprising is the national acclaim and the recognition that, you know, unlike say La Guadalupana, which is, you know, neighborhoody, and, you know, that what they're doing at Casa Emma is distinct, is special, is a more modern take on the genre.
Yeah, I think it brings their heritage into play. I mean, I had like a Tex-Mex breakfast yesterday. I had migas, you know, I was at Super Rica. It was fantastic as always. And by 11 o'clock, that place was completely full. Every seat at the bar was taken. I mean, you're right. Houstonians love a Mexican Tex-Mex breakfast. They love it. And when it's done well, and like I said, bringing more of like the Mex as opposed to the Tex into that, really, you know, the chicharron, the jiracha, the pollo, it's really appealing and very refreshing.
Well, and I think what's also impressive about it is that you can basically, the vegetarian stuff is maybe even more compelling than the carnivore stuff, the mushroom tutella, the carrot taco, the papaya salad. I mean, those are the dishes I gravitate towards, and more than, you know, the pork enchiladas or the pambazo or some of the other dishes that they do.
You know how when a brunch menu gets launched, you always see like, what are they going to, because French toast is such an inexpensive item. You're just taking bread and you're battering it and, you know, frying it and then putting, you know, syrup on it. So what are you going to do? Just fruit? And you always see like the stuffed French toast, that kind of thing. And they do a Hoya Santa, you know, this Hoya Santa custard with fresh berries, and it's a brioche, and it's just, oh God, it's just so satisfying and a wonderful take on that dish.
Yeah. So I think we have to say Bib Gourmand and all the other recognition, you know, I know it got a 4-star review from Bao Wang in the Chronicle. Is Casa Emma a top 10 Houston restaurant right now?
Wow. I don't know that a breakfast joint's going to break into a top 10. Like, is it worthy of having the discussion? Yes. But when I start thinking about the places I would exclude to put them in, I would probably have to say no. Would I put them on a list of best breakfast, you know, best coffee shop, best brunch? 100% I would. But I think to be, at least in my mind, to be named best restaurant, you've got to bring a little bit more to the table than just kind of breakfast and being open till 3 o'clock. It doesn't quite fulfill everything that I want from a restaurant, at least for me to rank it in the top 10. That's just me.
Yeah, no, I think it's a discussion worth having. And you know, I think by asking the question, I'm sort of implying that I think that it is because of just how consistently delicious it is, how compelling their offerings are. You know, I like the idea of having of, you know, in a city with, as you said, maybe not the best breakfast options. Although I never feel like I don't lack for breakfast places. Maybe they're not quite so distinguished, but in a city with a tradition of Mexican breakfast. And I just, you know, I think if you look at the best restaurants in Houston, I think this has to be in the mix. I mean, it's gotta be right there with all of them. And I haven't done the exercise recently, right? I haven't like put together the list of, you know, 25 or 30 places and then like actually rank them to see kind of where it shakes out for me. But as I'm thinking about it, if I were just judging on the quality and the consistency of the food, I think this is one of the most outstanding restaurants in Houston. And so I'm always delighted to see it get national attention because I remember when, you know, they started this is a kind of a pop-up in Greenway Plaza. And then they did the farmer's market thing through the pandemic. And now they have Popolo Taqueria at Finn Hall downtown. And Casa Emma is really the next evolution of that. And so just to see how far they've come and how hard they've worked to get there. I just think the world is place. And I was delighted to see it on the Bon Appetit list.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting also that the service, like as they've gotten very busy, that there's lines, how they've managed crowds, how they've managed volume and kept the volume, but kept, you know, it is counter service. You're not getting table service, but it's just always really friendly. It's always very professional. They've really kind of got their act together, and that speaks well.
Absolutely. All right. Topic number two. I just want to hit a couple of these sort of minor or you know, maybe not 5-star openings, but things that I think are sort of worth calling attention to. I just want to start briefly with Handy's Dozo. This is the hand roll bar from the Duck Stash Hospitality, which we know for Kokoro and Aiko and Himari and Doko and Bar Doko. But Handy's Dozo was, you know, they started with Kokoro at Bravery Chef Hall, and then they really kind of made their name with Handy's Dozo, the hand roll bar, first at that location in the Heights, and then in Montrose, and now in Spring Branch, where it's in this like hot little corner near Saigon Hustle, near Underbelly Burger and Blue Lagoon, the dive bar that Bobby Hugel took over last year. So what do you think about Handy's and kind of how it compares to some of the other hand roll options in town, like say Kira or Hondo?
Well, I mean, the hand roll craze is not going away anytime soon, and that's very evident. You know, what really impresses me about what Duck Stash has done is we've really seen them grow very fast, very quickly. And, you know, sometimes that's a cautionary tale when we've seen other operations that were either undercapitalized or had, you know, bad workplace culture. You know, that's a cancer, you know, when it comes from the top or even from within. And we've seen it destroy, you know, very promising operations. And we've seen them expand very rapidly to the Woodlands, how well they've done. I mean, I go by the one on Montrose, the Handy's in Montrose on a Monday, and it's full. And it's such a great concept in the sense of people really aren't staying there much longer than an hour. You know, they have it's like a very small labor footprint. It's a very small geography footprint. And it's just like they operate very well. It's what they've established themselves is how they can operate in very small spaces at a very high level. And that has always impressed me. So we've also seen the whole area of Spring Branch, as you know, as we've seen the quality of places that are opening and pushing themselves west.
It's I want to talk about Spring Branch in a second, but I want to just talk about the concept itself.
Okay.
Just for a second, because you're right. I mean, it is very efficient. It's relatively affordable. And, you know, you talk about, you know, you're not there for more than an hour. Well, yeah, because you're sitting on a backless stool, right? There's only so long that anybody's going to linger on one of those, I think, if you're over, you know, 30 or whatever. You know, the other thing I kind of like about this concept is that it's kind of replaced the poke thing, right? Like we have hand rolls now. Mm. The poke trend has kind of come and gone. And I feel like I'm getting a better quality product in a hand roll than, you know, scooped out of some cafeteria looking setup at a poke place.
Yeah, you make an interesting point. You know, those poke places are generally, they're fast casual. You order the counter and you sit down and they bring it to you. Whereas the hand roll places, you're sitting at a long bar, you're watching them make it in front of you, they're handing it to you, you can interact with them. So, you know, it's still not like the fancy white tablecloth or tableside service where they're on top, but it's a higher level of service that's certainly fast casual. And I think you make a good point. That's kind of a game changer. It's different, to be sure. It's an increase in quality of the experience. And, you know, it doesn't break the bank either.
Right. I mean, three hand rolls, you know, 20-ish bucks, four hand rolls, 25 or 30 bucks, you know, if you want to splurge on a crudo or if they have uni or caviar or whatever to upgrade it, and, you know, that's typically available to you. But, you know, you can, right, you know, two people can have hand rolls for lunch for, you know, $50 plus a tip. That's a pretty good deal these days.
Yeah, it could be a casual date night. It can be friends, you know, or even like, for, you know, and I've done this before is as a solo diner. You know, we increasingly seeing more solo diners. And, you know, what is their option? To sit at the bar, you know, they can be sort of the awkward single table. And there's nothing awkward about this whatsoever. It just fully integrates. And, you know, so they're onto something here.
Right. And as you started to say, I mean, I think Spring Branch is kind of the next logical place for them to be because we've seen so much growth in that area, right? They are next to Saigon Hustle, the fast casual Vietnamese restaurant. They are across the street from Underbelly Burger. They're down the road from the second location of Hondo and Fiji's Barbecue and everything else that's opened up out there. So, you know, I wasn't surprised that they chose Spring Branch for this.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you've mentioned before, and we've talked about the proliferation of ultra luxury, high end sushi, omakase, you know, and steakhouses that here they're going the other way. They're saying, you know, we're going to give you something affordable. It's not just going to be this kind of impersonal, fast, casual counter service, but we'll have someone there taking care of you. And we're going to give you a high quality experience at a good price point, you know, and that's a great trend in today's times.
Absolutely. And then just briefly, I want to note that the new location of Katz's has opened on I-10, kind of near Gessner, in the same shopping center as the memorial location of the Pit Room and the upcoming location of the Kolache Shop that we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago. You know, Michael, I don't know that there's a ton to say about Katz's. You talk about changes after the pandemic. A lot of those 24-hour restaurants went away, right? House of Pies isn't 24 hours anymore. Spanish Village isn't really 24 hours anymore. You know, you've basically dot coffee shop and Katz's is still holding it down. And I think the only thing about opening by Memorial City is it may not have the bar scene, right? That kind of drives, if you think about the Heights location or the Westheimer location, especially the Montrose location that drives those late night diners. But what it does have is a massive Memorial Hermann Hospital in Memorial City. And I can just see this being like patients, staff, nurses, doctors looking for something that's not the hospital cafeteria that's open in the wee hours. I could see that driving a decent amount of business to the new Katz's.
Oh, 100%. I've watched several breakfast places. What's the place that came from Colorado?
Snooze.
Yeah, Snooze just crushes it everywhere they go. But like the one in Montrose, I constantly see, at least at certain hours, filled with the medical center. You see people in scrubs, and like they're like the amount of business they get from the medical community is significant. So I hadn't even thought of that. So that's, you know, well placed to be sure. And as we talked about earlier, like having another breakfast place, let's bring it. You know, I like that breakfast. I generally either cook it at home, but like I love having it at 1 in the morning, 2 and 3 in the morning. Love it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think if you work at a restaurant in that area, you know, it's ripe with all kinds of restaurants, especially if you think about kind of city center and that I-10 corridor. I think that staff will benefit from having a late night option available to them. I think, you know, there's a bunch of hotels around city center. I think those people will benefit from having Katz's. And look, I mean, I got the DM, of course, last week. You know, is Katz's as good as Kenny and Ziggy's? And you know, I don't think so. Right. I think Kenny and Ziggy's is the gold standard for Jewish delis in Houston. But, you know, I think they do things to a certain standard. It's consistent. And sometimes it's just nice to be able to get a potato latke at 2 in the morning or pancakes at 4 a.m. or whatever it is. And so, you know, I think to Kratz's credit, right, they serve booze for as long as they are legally allowed to, 7 a.m. to 2 a.m., which is a good and valuable thing sometimes.
100%.
All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Michael, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Yaya's Greek Kitchen. This is the evolution of Yaya Mary's, the Pappas Group's Greek restaurant that used to be at 610 in San Felipe near the Galleria. Now it is in the former Papado location on Richmond, next to the Little Papacitos at Kirby in Richmond. This is a big change for Pappas and for Yaya's. It's gone in a kind of a more upscale direction, obviously influenced by the success that they had turning Little Pappas Seafood into Little's Oyster Bar, and just kind of leaning into the family's Greek heritage and making a statement about the kind of upscale Greek dining that they want to present. I want to break this down from a couple of perspectives, but kind of start at the beginning with the changes to the space. You know, we knew this as a Papado for many, many years. I think I'm probably not the only one who remembers going there for brunches on Sundays, but it's a very different looking restaurant now.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous. I mean, it's you have these beautiful soft tones, but it's not bland at all. It's mixed with enough color in there. You know, like you said, they've kind of leaned into their Greek heritage. And so you see, you know, the family portraits there, but it's not solely that. You know, you see this kind of real strong Mediterranean vibe. The bar, which is massive, is beautiful. I mean, we talked about this at dinner that I was looking forward to coming back and just either sort of a date night or even solo, just having, you know, a meal at the bar, because it was so inviting and comfortable. And then outside, even though this is a restaurant that launched in this late summer in Houston, we know what that means. I sat outside for a while in the outdoor area, and that was like, it was so comfortable. I can't wait for there to be appropriate weather where the dining is an option in that environment. So like the look, the feel, the aesthetic, it definitely speaks to who they are and to a more upscale experience.
Right. And I like that they didn't go with the sort of obvious, you know, Greek, you think blue and white, you know, this is green. They have the Greek, the big painting of the Greek ship on the wall. If you go to kind of the family corner, they have a portrait of, you know, Yaya Mary, the family matriarch, you know, a tribute to her, along with photographs from her life, including one where she's about to start an airplane propeller, because apparently she learned how to fly. She had quite a life. And then if you go into the restroom, the hallway is just full of reproductions of paintings that the company's family collected over the years from Greece. So they've reproduced those and put them on the wall. And it's just, it's little things like that. And then, you know, you mentioned the bar. And of course, that's the big change, right? Because from when you walk in the Papado days, the bar was on the left and it was cramped and it was kind of dark. Now it's been moved to the right wall. It's got I mean, probably 30 seats. So it's really impressive. And then the other thing they did is they had a wall covering windows, which, you know, in the Instagram age will never fly, right? Because we want that natural light. We want pretty pictures. So they tore down the wall, Mr. Gorbachev. And then there's just so much more light in the auxiliary dining room. And it makes a huge difference in the warmth of the space.
Yeah, I think you make good points on all of those things, is that they didn't go for the obvious, like you said, the blue and white, you know, Santorini kind of look. They played it hard into who they are. But also, like, if you know anything, and I'm by no means an expert in interior design, but I've opened enough restaurants and seen, you know, the cost that goes into them and what they've chosen in terms of not just the furniture, but the light fixtures. They're very well considered, and these are not inexpensive either. But it's not this, didn't strike me as like overly opulent. Like, they've clearly gone upscale, but it didn't feel like, oh, I'm in a different world, or this is maybe not a world where I belong, which sometimes I feel that way when I'm in an ultra luxurious place. I kind of feel like, you know, there's sort of that imposter syndrome. And here it was very welcoming, very comfortable.
No, I think that's right. And of course, that kind of speaks to the difference between Yaya's Greek Kitchen and Little's Oyster Bar, right? Little's Oyster Bar is smaller. It's more intimate. It's more expensive. It's more premium. You know, Yaya's is like 250 seats, 300 seats, right? They want to do volume. And so it has to be approachable in its design. It has to be the kind of place where you can, you know, within the bounds of good taste, kind of wear what you're comfortable wearing, because it's not that premium. It's not Pappas Brothers Steakhouse. It's not Little's Oyster Bar. It's a more, you know, family friendly kind of concept.
I mean, the other side of that, you make a good point in that respect, is that when I've talked to a lot of people who have gone, one, universally pretty good, really good responses on the food, but the increase in price, because people who knew Yaya Mary's when it was at 610 and San Felipe, you know, it was obviously a very different price point, me included. Now, I had looked and seen the menu before I went, so I knew what to expect. But, you know, I've talked to several people who've had sticker shock over this, like, what happened? Because it's now a dramatic, it's a good 25 to, you know, 60% more expensive than the other, you know, dining experience. And I think that'll be a transition that they're going to have to weather, is getting people, you know, acclimated to that this is a more upscale experience, and the price point is going to be commensurate.
Yeah, and they dealt with that with Little's Oyster Bar, right? People would come in looking for, you know, $25 fried shrimp platters, and, you know, sorry, we're not doing that anymore. You know, Yaya Mary's had the Euro sandwiches at, you know, 15, 18, 20 bucks, but that's gone. You know, this is a more upscale restaurant. It's a deliberate choice on their part. And yeah, I think they're going to have to do a little bit of educating, but I think, you know, people, you just need to look at the menu on the website and plan accordingly, because honestly, I think a lot of what we had was really delicious.
I'm always kind of shocked when people don't look at it beforehand, because of course I pore over menus like before I go on vacation. That's what I feel like I'm spending half my time doing, but maybe that's just me. You know, some of their appetizers are pretty pricey. I mean, octopus for $32 is not an inexpensive proposition, but it's also extremely shareable. I mean, it's way too big for one person. That's definitely good for anywhere from two to four people, really. And something like the quality of, you know, the baba ganoush, I guess, which they have listed as an eggplant dip, and the hummus was really good. And we had some lamb chops, and lamb chops was one of my favorite things they had at Yaya Mary's, because it was so affordable and good. And here it didn't disappoint at all. It was one of the best dishes we had that night, I thought.
Yes, I thought the lamb chops were really nicely cooked. I thought they were well seasoned. And I think the pricing is consistent. I mean, if you look at kind of where they are in the marketplace now, you know, they're kind of going head to head with a place like Rumi's Kitchen or Octo. And I think if you look at the prices on their menus for lamb chops, that you'll see that Yaya's is right in there with them. You know, the other thing that really stuck out to me was the cold seafood platter that we had. And again, they're kind of leaning on that, those experiences with Little's and trying to give people like a more premium kind of thing with the crudo and the octopus, the marinated octopus, and the oysters with the pomegranate and the mignonette. I mean, I thought that was all very impressive and very delicious.
And there was four of us dining when we ate there. And I'm used to, like, you know, the chilled seafood platters, the towers, you know, starting usually just under 100 and going to the stratosphere from there. And here, like, it was great for all of us. We all got to taste some of it. It was a great beginning, and it was like, I think it was $63, which,
well, no, okay, so what's funny is it was $54 when we went, because I commented on it, and they've already realized that's too cheap. If you look on the website today, as we're recording, they're up to 63.
Yeah. At 63, that's a really good value. I mean, go to Clark's, go to any other high, go to Little Seafood, go to any of the high end places that do these, you know, or any of the high end steakhouses that do, and they're going to be significantly more. So you know, it really comes down to that word, and that's a good value. So, you know, choose accordingly. I mean, people look at a menu, you should look at the prices and decide what's good for you. And I think, like, for me, if I was coming there with a group of four, I would be disappointed if we didn't get it. You know, it's like, let's just get this to start, because it's so excessively priced and such a good selection, and the quality is right there.
Right. And you know, thinking about the entrees, I mean, you know, I had that lamb shank. It was a really big lamb shank. Like, it was a shareable, it was massive kind of situation. And I think you can, so you have that choice, right? You can order a couple of like, if you're four people, you can order a couple of appetizers and share them, or excuse me, you can order a couple of entrees and share them, because they're substantial, built around some of these smaller plates. Or, you know, you can do the traditional app entree thing, and then just know that you're going to have a ton of food. Like, you're probably taking leftovers home. And I appreciate that kind of flexibility, because, you know, as you know, like, when we dine, we tend to sort of order broadly and share everything.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing worth mentioning, and because it might have been my second favorite dish, was the dessert. They did a chocolate cake. It's a socolapita, which is almost, you know, it has that kind of almost tiramisu quality, where it's, you know, it's soaked in a cocoa syrup and dark chocolate. It was just so moist. It was so delicious. I'm a chocolate lover all the way. And I was like, you know, I'm kind of trying to hold off, going to lose some weight, I'm just going to take a bite. I couldn't stop eating it. It was so good.
Well, and I found out recently, Pappas has hired your old friend, Samantha Mendoza.
Yeah. Who
worked at Trinity for a long time, worked for Ronnie Killen for a long time. She's now on their corporate pastry team. So credit to Samantha for that baklava cheesecake and that chocolate that we all really enjoyed.
Yeah, 100%. So it's like, they're not really phoning anything in. The sides didn't grab me as much, but you know what? I've only been there one time, and, you know, I want to go back, and there's several other things I want to have. It's been a long time coming, and I know there was a lot of excitement. The amount of industry people I saw there, like, at every table, either, you know, people who work in the industry, or, you know, the regular diners who I know from the Houston community. And if I didn't see them there that night, they were certainly in my Instagram feed that week. And I don't think that's going to be a one-shot thing. I think, you know, Pappas has proven that they know how to do high quality. They know how to step it up. And consistency is something that they are so well known for. This is not a company that does anything on the fly, you know, or off the cuff. They do things very considered. They're a very vertically integrated company. And, you know, when they say we want this to be the best quality, you know, it's going to be. So it's just a question of, does that fit what you want? Does that fit your pocketbook? And for me, it's like, I'm looking forward to going back.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, it's been 5 years since Yaya Mary's closed, and yeah, you know, that's the luxury of being Pappas Restaurants, is you can take your time and do these things in a deliberate way. And, you know, I think we had for being the second day open to the public, I'd say we had a really good experience. Yeah, there were a couple little service flubs and a little bit of confusion about, you know, whose job it was to do what. And of course, they were fussing over us. We were very much, you know, a known quantity from start to finish. But really, I mean, a very strong first impression. And like you, I would like to go back, because there are more dishes I want to try. And I do want to see, like, what it's like now that they've had a couple of weeks to settle in.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And like I said, it has a kind of a multi appeal. Like, I could see myself going there and dining solo in the bar, going there for a date, and going, once again, to me, the most attractive course is the group, because I want to try everything. And that's what that's what we do as a group. And it's very, you know, shared friendly food. You know, it's the Pappas never shies away from their portion sizes, but they aren't out of control here either. You know, it's like, I like going to restaurants and actually not having to take food home. I don't want to take food home. And, you know, in a group environment, that works really well.
All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurant of the week. Before I let you go, I know you guys at the Houston Barbecue Festival have another event coming up. So tell people about what you've got going on.
Yeah, so for over 10 years now, we've been doing the Houston Barbecue Throwdown. This is an event that's inside at St. Arnold, so it's air conditioned, where we have 13, 14 barbecue places that try to do the next great single smoke dish, you know, and it's a judged event. It's judged by you who come there, as well as a professional level of judges. We've got just a few tickets left. It's going to be selling out shortly, and that's Sunday, September 14th, 1 o'clock at St. Arnold. So you can go to HOU BBQ and get your tickets there before they are gone.
All right, Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Thomas Billy from Belly of the Beast.